Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, we had an epic conversation with the one and only former Tony-Tony-Tonian, Raphael Saddiq. This episode, we continue that conversation with part two. He talks about more of his solo career, making records. He talks about scoring movies. He talks about all the other artists that he's worked with. Really interesting tidbits for you music heads out there. This is part two. Part two of Raphael Saddiq on Questlove Supreme. Hope you enjoy it. Yo, how many other random stories do you have like that?
Yeah, because you just dropped
maybe one or two, but that's my favorite one.
Oh my god! Wait a minute. I don't even want to skip. I gotta ask you something. Yes or no, and this is without blowing up your spot.
I already know where you're going with.
No. I don't think you know. Is the Four Tops strung out for your love? Does that mean anything to you?
You got me strung out. That.
No, it's on the Catfish record, 1977.
I mean, every record means something to me, but not like that. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm curious to what do you think.
Let me then ask, who was the creative head behind I Couldn't Keep It to Myself?
Me.
All right. I'm just asking. No, there's...
Similarities?
There's a song on that Catfish record from 1977 that...
Really?
Is literally the twin of that. And I was like, oh, damn. They made their version of that song. But
I mean, yeah. I felt like those two chord progressions back and forth was a lot of different records.
Exactly. Like anyone could, that's what I'm saying. It's like a Sam Smith situation. Like anyone could have picked those
for
chords.
For that song, not that close, but.
Right.
Now, speaking of which, with House of Music, for House of Music, was that just your derivative challenge album where it was just like, I'm going to do my version of this song and that song?
Man, my whole career is that.
I know, but this album, did anyone from Nirvana's camp ever get at you about Let's Get Down?
Because to me, I think they got that. I thought that was from a derivative of also... Get down, not Cool in the Game, but I'm your boogeyman. That's what I
Casey
am.
Casey and the Sunshine Band.
Yeah, like they got a song that sounds like that too. With that, come on, let's get down. They got a joint like that too. But the way I was singing that song, I started singing it like it was an effect on my voice, and then I put an effect on my voice. I was still going, come on, yeah. I started doing that, but. Casey and the Sunshine Band got a joint that's just like that.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, so they might have got theirs.
You scared me for a second, Raphael. I thought you were about to say no. Their version goes, ding, 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 ding,
ding, ding. But mine went, ding, 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 ding.
Right. No, I'm playing.
McDonald's and McDowell's.
So for me, I got to bring up, all right, yes, we'll enter some sort of talk of what they do, but... Can you please talk about how you discovered the great Spanky Chalmers Alford?
Yeah, sure, man.
The guitarist god of...
Yeah, my mom, it's funny, my mom is 89 now. And,
oh, bless
and
her.
And she's lost some of her short-term memory. Mm-hmm. But one thing she never forgets to say to me every other day is, I show Miss Spanky.
Wow.
All the time. Spanky lived with me for a long time. And so what happened was Spanky, growing up in Oakland and listening to Gospel Quartet, Spanky was sort of the king of that. And I didn't know him for years. I just knew his music. I knew how he played. And at one point, the last album was House of Music, I think, Tony's last album was. Mm-hmm. And we had these musicians that everybody thought I needed to make music. This is when the Tony sort of split up.
Mm-hmm.
It was like Outkast.
Two
I
camps.
Did my side of the album. and they did their side of the album. And
was there a coach in the middle that sort of
make that happen?
Yeah.
For years, I couldn't really understand what I did, you know, because there's always two sides to a story, and sometimes you like to point, if you're on one side, you could point the finger, but I never knew what happened. So we were getting together, and we were going to record together. We had this house. Jerry Brown was going to record. The whole thing was we were going to bring the press all to one house. They're going to interview us before we put this album. That was going to be a part of the press jumbo marketing plan. Then I get a call, and they were like, you record your side by yourself, and we will record our side ourselves. So they took the guitar player that we had at the time. They took him. So they was like, well, if he doesn't have the guitar player, he can't do what he do. I don't know, whatever. So
it's
get
like
home.
A game of basketball.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, who's
so
on
I
side?
Get
who's
home, and my mother has a friend named Frankie. And there's somebody at my house said, Frankie called you. I call him back. My mother's friend, this guy was kind of like my godfather. But he said, this is Frankie. He said, no, this is Spanky. I said, Spanky who? Spanky Chalmers. I said, the guitar player Spanky? I was like, put something on it. I said, where's your guitar? Play. He played the guitar on the phone. The next day, I had him in my house in Sacramento. And we was inseparable. I let him leave after that. Another guy. So I got him. And we recorded that album. We recorded with you. We recorded with a lot of different people. And he sort of wanted to teach me to play. But I just thought it was impossible to learn how to play that good. So some things I did learn, I kick myself every day for not, you know, sitting down with him more as I should have. But I really want to introduce him to people like yourself and D and different people. And he got a chance to meet people like Pino. Because he was so well-respected in the gospel field, right. I felt like his talent would lend himself to so many people. And I was just, you know, happy to have him in my life as much as I did. But that's how I actually met Spanky.
How old was he? He was an older guy. How old was he?
Yeah, he was an older guy. But this guy could teach. I mean, for many years, people would knock on my door, my house, my studio. I'm here for Spanky. Spanky's, I got a guitar lesson with Spanky. Or even the album that he played, the Voodoo album on, he played this guitar that I bought from my uncle for like $350. Some guy sold him his Gibson. I let Spanky use the guitar. He played it all over the album. Mm-hmm. And it was my guitar, but when it was time to give it back, Spanky didn't want to give it back. So me and Spanky kind of fell out. I was like, Spanky, I just let you use it, but it's my guitar. To this day, people still come by my studio and they just want to look at that guitar.
You still have that guitar?
I still got it.
Wow.
That's what's up. Played everything on.
You've, of course, met Sharky, correct?
I've met Sharky a million times. Amazing guitar
player.
Yeah,
the story that D tells me about Sharky was like, he met Sharky when Sharky was like maybe 12 or 13. And it's so weird. It's so weird meeting like, and this is the same for like DJ Harrison. Like there's a slew of Gen Z or millennial Gen Z, you know, born in 88, 89, 90, that was like 7 or 8 when this stuff is coming out and how it affects them. Like, mm-hmm. There's at least 5 cats I know now, 4 of them who've never met Spanky ever. And it's as if it's like, I know, you know, when people say like, well, the spirit of blah, blah, blah is in them. Like, I fully believe that because I've never seen such a mythical figure like Spanky and his story and the legend of Spanky like now spread out through the industry.
Universe.
Yeah, yeah. It's just something to believe. And like right now, like I don't know if you've been back to Oakland or if you're still like heavy into it. Like, do you still meet musicians that are like just off kilter like that, that are like killing that no one will ever know about, but like just local cats?
There's a couple. I haven't met anybody. I haven't met anybody like that, but I know there's a few people brewing, you know, in every department, you know, beat makers, samplers, keyboard players, If you keep your eyes open, it's going to be another one. But that was that one right there was a special one because he was so good, but he was always keen on making records. You know, if he worked with somebody, he wanted to give you a part that can make a record. Like every time I play, you know, What They Do, when they go, blur, 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 blur. Now I sit on the guitar and I try to learn those parts now, and I pretty much got it, but I'm not as nice as Spank. You know, Spank is like, I got hard bass fingers. I play really hard. And but just knowing, like, to put him in one of the greatest hip hop bands ever, you know, to you guys that gracefully put that on your record, when I was working with you guys on that record, I feel like I had to do nothing. You got the best. You got a guy that rap in your group that could rap for 69 months without stopping. You got you who's just gonna play a beat that everybody like. I got Spanky playing guitar. I didn't have to do nothing but whisper something.
Wow.
So
that's him playing with D. The beginning. Of, oh wow.
That's Spanky. I had it. All I had to do was match a mirror drum. I had to go boom, 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 boom. So people say you produced that record. I was like, bruh. That's like being Phil Jackson with Jordan on the team. I don't know if that's producing. That's called a perfect storm. Being in a room with the best people.
Sometimes less is more, and that, trust me, that helped. Everything about that shit helped. I also like to note, you were the person that also taught me the one thing that my girlfriend hates, which is abusing my awards. When I got to your house, your American Music Award was your doorstop. That's when I was like, well, you know, Raphael's thing is his doorstop. So I've used every Grammy I ever had, like bathroom, all that stuff. And, you know, is that American Music Award still like somewhere in the trash somewhere?
Probably. You don't even know where it is.
Probably. Man, I remember I did this interview and I forgot that thing was in the corner, man, and somewhere. And this lady wrote, yeah, his American Music Awards was like in the corner with like dust all over him. Like,
when we went home that night, it was like, yo, man, his award was a door stopper. And I was like, yeah, man, I want to be that famous one day where I just don't give a fuck where my Grammy. That's what I'm going to do when I get my shit.
Hey, sure enough, you know what? A guy
my
from
first Grammy
your...
went right on the toilet. I was like, I'm going to top you, Raphael Sadiq.
Really? One of the guys from around your way, the famous Tom Bell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I met Tom Bell through his daughter one time. I was walking down the street and I'm like, hey, in San Francisco. I said, you look familiar. She said, I met you before. She said, you know, it sounded like a one-liner. She was cute. And she goes, yeah, I'm Tom Bell's daughter. And I go, damn. She said, that's what you said last time you met me. So I said, come to the show. She comes to the show. We're walking down the street. She put Tom Bell on the phone. Tom Bell tells me, don't worry about awards. Grammys, any of that stuff. He said, because when the IRS come to your house, they leave those on the mantelpiece.
They were shit. Damn. That ain't even real gold.
And
you
so
right.
then one of my friends who got a drug case, and one of my good friends, and he wanted me to bail him out. And so the bail people came to my house and they wanted me to sign my house as collateral. It's a guy I grew up with. And I was like, I'm not putting up my house collateral in my head. Like, I don't know if I'm doing that. Even though I knew he wasn't going to run. But they was offering him nine-year deal. They wanted to cut his locks off. He wasn't doing none of that. So the lady and her daughter, they look up at my wall and they see all these gold albums. She goes, what about four of those? And I did like this.
They don't mean nothing. They don't mean nothing.
No, I act like
but you got to sell it.
$1 billion. I sell it. Uh-huh. I was like,
oh, you're acting. I love it. Okay.
Maybe I could part with just maybe four for a little while. They took those gold albums down like they was worth $1 million a piece.
For the record, are gold albums gold?
No.
No.
Okay.
No. They're not.
Them joints is about worth $25.
I mean, thank you, Fonte.
Yeah, they're not.
Anyone can have
honest
a board
question.
Record.
Honest question.
Sorry.
Wait.
Yeah. So,
Ray. What?
That's hilarious.
I gotta say that your work with G1 and DJ Quick definitely I felt like was a marriage made in heaven. I always wanted to know why you didn't do more with them, or at least in that period.
You're good. You're good. You're good.
Motherfucker,
you ask really good questions.
I'm a fan.
Yeah, I want to ask you about Jake and the Fat Man too. After this,
of course,
so you can that's keep going. Yeah,
well, yeah. But I wanted to know why G1 and DJ Quick didn't work with you more, which led to and nothing. I love your work with Jake and the Fat Man too.
Well, what happened was they Jake and the Fat Man just scratched them. They're just terrible people.
Damn.
Okay.
Oakland. Wow. Hey.
Simple and direct.
Yeah, for real. They're not worth talking about. Except Bobby, the guy who programmed drums, was like really good. He was more like trying to be like a Dilla. I've always needed drum programmers to finish what I like to do. And he was that. But the rest of it was not worth anything talking about. But
damn.
Back to Quick. In G1. The reason why we didn't do more songs, because it was a budget thing, and I wanted to do 3 songs with them, but the band kept saying it was too much money. So every time I would say it was okay, Quick would come back to me and said, lawyer said it wasn't okay. So after 3 times, I asked my brother, who's saying no when I'm saying yes? So we were going to get about 3 songs for probably $45,000, which was a deal for Quick.
Yeah.
And Quick was being really cool with us, and they were never okay to budget. So we end up only doing 1, which we would have follow-up songs, and it was Let's Get Down. And pretty much nobody showed up to the sessions but me. So that was the band wasn't it. That was just me and Quick and G1.
Wow.
And that's why we didn't get more songs. I wanted 3 songs, so if we had this record, we'd have a follow-up and a follow-up. But, you know, you're young, you know. So knowledge is wasted on the young, you know. They didn't know, you know.
Yeah. Towards the end of House of Music, did you know that this is the end of my tenure with Tony?
Yeah, I was sort of the dummy in that one, because I think I went to like the president and was like, yeah, this is my last album, and I had written more than half the songs, and so that's a mistake you don't do because they would have promoted the song even more, the albums.
Oh,
if I said I was doing the next album, right?
Exactly. Two. They thought they had more in the tank. Yeah.
And so instead of putting the money into us, they put into that other little group. They had those three kids. I forget the name of them now. 3 little white kids, little pop group.
All for
the
one.
Time, they were brothers.
No.
Nick Lachey and them.
Nope. Before them.
Mm. Was it all? It wasn't all. Nope. Soul, was it
called, TRL like those that type of group, like
yeah.
a TRL group or
yeah. I started with a TRS, the something brothers. They were brothers.
Look, I like Hanson. No,
Hanson.
Oh, ooh. Hanson. Okay,
was an H, not a T. Yeah.
No, wow. It's a TRL, like a TV TRL group.
It was right. Hanson. So once I came back, like you know, yeah, I don't think I'm gonna do any more records and. A solo record, and so what they did, they just made the money back that they put out on us, and they kept it moving with the next group.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a bad move on my part, but I definitely knew that I didn't know if I was going to do a solo record. I was really confused because I really love being in bands, and so you know,
yeah, which leads to the original Lucy Pearl, which was supposed to be Lynn Whip Rose.
Yeah.
She was saying, okay,
so
Lindo.
Can you
I
talk
confused.
About your Uma yeah. / Lynn Whip Rose / like your side groups and the idea of the super group that sort of stalled?
Didn't happen.
I mean, yeah, so Lucy Pearl got off the ground, but you know.
Well, the first was going to be Lynn Whip Rose with Michael Archer and
right.
and Q-Tip, Kamal. Oof. And
so Kamal was in this as well.
Kamal was part of Lynn Whip Rose.
I did not know. Okay.
It was us 3, but you know, those are my really good friends, and we're very left brain people.
Right.
And we're artists, and at the time D was hot as you know, he was hotter than fish grease at this point. So, you know, in his defense, he couldn't really stop to do that.
Right.
You know what I mean? He couldn't stop to do that. He wasn't gonna stop to do that, but he wanted to do it. Chip kind of wanted to do it, but all of us being so left-brained, it could have never worked. You know what I mean? I mean, you know the story better than me.
Right.
So,
speaking of which, wait, before I forget, what exactly did you do on Midnight? Because I ask Bob Power all the time, like, Raphael has credit on Midnight, on Midnight Marauders. Is that you on bass? Is that your fuzz line?
No, that's me on The Night Is On My Mind.
Yeah, well, the song's called...
Playing Bass.
Midnight.
Oh, that's him playing bass. Okay.
Oh, okay. Okay. I see. Right.
Yeah, no, yeah.
I'm thinking it's the guitar organy thing.
No. My claim to fame is I'm the only R&B cat on one of the biggest hip-hop albums in the world. I'm like, shut it down. Drop the mic.
Yes.
I don't want to hear it, hip-hop fans. I want to hear it.
Living out your dreams.
You came out to play with them the first, like, me and Tariq went to a Tribe New Year's show in New York, and you came out and played bass with him. We was like, yeah, like losing our minds and shit.
Yeah, man, I love hip hop. Is just so, it's so bass heavy for me. And I just like when I first heard Rapper's Delight when I was a kid, came on the radio, or I was like, and it wasn't Good Times. I was like, what is this? Yeah. And I was like, oh, it's on. And from there, you know, it was all about New York hip hop for me. I just always, I just always liked the Brownstones. I was in love with Brownstones. I didn't even know what they were called. You know, I actually like when I saw Run DMC come to Oakland and they got off the tour bus and Hurricane and all these jackets came out with Def Jam. It just looked so
cool.
New York looked so powerful and strong for hip hop. I just always knew it was a bass thing, and I just always wanted to, you know, beats and bass. I still want to do a project where I'm playing bass and it's just bass and drums. And I just got like MCs just like rhyming on an album, just all MCs.
Why is that hasn't been done yet?
Yeah. We'll find.
All right. What's that?
Organization. You know, organizing it.
Oh, yeah. Y'all need some.
I feel you. how, when you finally got to do Instant Vintage, how was that for you? Like, to, you know, like, now that you're officially on your own as a solo artist, was it an easy pivot to do? Or, you know, because now you don't have, I mean, I'm assuming that there's some level of collaboration between you and the rest of your band that, you know, makes the process easy. But if you're there alone, just making the decisions, that has to be a harder thing where you're responsible for everything.
Musically, it wasn't hard at all. What was hard was the interviews, the press, because I was used to being able to, if I was tired, to break up the interviews into like two or three. Okay. I don't know how people do the whole solo thing where it's just like people talking to you all day. That drove me crazy. Wow. Playing music, you could leave me in a room. I mean, I got everything in my room right now. I got Ableton here. I could pull up right now and write a song right now. I got my mic in here. I could do that all day. Right. But when you start getting me, like, you got to talk to 20 people, and I can't go like, Dwayne, take four of these. Tim, right, take three of these. Mm-hmm. I was confused about that. I think I gave a call to Mike Archer, and I said, hey, bro, said, man, I got to give you a couple of props because this is like a little different, you know, like, and, you know, he don't really do interviews.
I was about to say, that's why he don't do them,
He don't do them, you know, but, you know, you can't, you know, so I can't really be that person. It looked like I'm copying Prince or somebody. I don't talk to people. I mean, I really couldn't pull that. So, but yeah, I think that was the hardest part. And I think performing live was, I thought I had it all together, and I did this show in Chicago.
Right.
I think I was singing a song called, damn, I don't even know the name of the song now. Go upstairs and change.
Body parts.
Yeah. I was singing body parts.
I love
parts.
The string arrangements on that song too, man. I love the strings on that. That shit is dope.
Thank you. That was Mr. Benjamin Wright. And I think I walked out and I just, I sound like a sheep for the whole song. I was like, it's been a long time. I'm talking about the whole entire song. I'm like, shake out of it. Shake out. I couldn't do it until like maybe in the middle of the second song, I popped out of it. I said, I didn't even know I could be that scared. I was really nervous because when I had my brother on this side and Tim and all the guys behind me, it's like you got a wall of people. You know, it'd be like you playing with the Roots and they'd be like,
an army.
Just leave everybody off the stage. And you just go play drums and you go rap a song. It's going to be a little different, even though you know you're about to get off. Yeah. That was a little weird.
AKA your DJ career.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want exactly. I want to ask you about that record too, man. The record with Calvin Richardson. How did y'all hook up? He's another Carolina excuse guy. Me? Yeah, excuse me. Yeah,
excuse
man.
Me. Excuse me. Well, that song I wrote that song for Angie Stone.
Okay.
And so once we were singing and it was happening, I was like, "Hey, Angie, I think I need this for my album." And he just happened to be hanging out with her that day, and I told both of them, I was like, "Yeah, I think I'm taking this one for my album," and that's how I got on the album. And they were cool about it. They
speaking
like,
of excuse me, speaking of excuse me, dog, why did you take the Live Off the House of Blues album out of rotation, like in streaming?
I thought something was missing.
It nowhere. Only because that version of excuse me on that record, to me, where you guys do the false ending. It's gonna be y'all, and then you go back into the song. Right. That's my favorite shit. I abused, like, after I heard that almost every Roots song does a false ending.
Yeah,
it goes back into the. That is my favorite thing. I'm just begging you, please put that record.
It must
back.
Be an issue.
Yeah, I am. Because that was a Navarre. That was the first records that I did independently. So those two records, Ray Ray. And that record I'm re-releasing, and I'm trying to get the Lucy Pearl album back right now to release them all on my new venture.
Wait, Lucy Pearl's not available for streaming?
Wait. No, it's still available, but it's not the way it should be available.
Hold on. So
yeah, he's trying to bring that thing back under new management.
Oh, I got you. I got you. Okay.
So about Lucy Pearl, man. I've seen, I've heard stories from a lot of people that were involved, heard Don's stuff. From your perspective, what was that experience? Like, what was the kind of rise, fall, whatever? How was that?
Which part?
What was that like? Why did y'all only do one record?
Well, Don Robinson only, she wanted to do a solo album before she actually worked with us. And I think she wanted to do a solo record when she worked with In Vogue. So I think Sylvia Rhone gave her a deal. Dr. Dre gave her a deal, and none of those worked out. And then she kind of grew up in Oakland. I think she's from Connecticut, though, from some part of Connecticut. But she grew up in Oakland a lot. So I just thought first we were auditioning girls, and the first girl we talked to was Tamar Braxton.
Oh, okay.
So then we were like, maybe not, and then we said. So somebody said I should call Don Robinson. We kind of heard some stories, but I was like, you know, let's see if she want to do it. And she agreed to do it. We worked with it. I got my friend Monet to, she's a female writer who Don knows. She's from Oakland. She's singing with a lot of country singers. She's a great writer. And so she came on board and we just got together. As soon as the record came out, we got to Amsterdam. Don was like, this is my last record, my last tour. And we were only like 3 months into the record. And so she pretty much quit. She pretty much quit pretty fast. And I mean, if you follow her thread on YouTube, you'll hear her dogging, just killing me, saying I help her lose her house. And,
oh, yeah. She's not happy.
I mean, but the group was only together for 3 months. I mean, her house wouldn't have been an escrow. I mean.
Oh, okay.
All of a sudden, we didn't stay longer. We didn't stay together long enough for somebody to buy a house or lose a house.
Yes. And then came Joy. Right,
and then Joy helped me out and came to finish the tour for us. We were just finishing the tour off, really, and that was it. But we had a blast making the album. But when we were doing the vocals, I pretty much would go to La Mondrian and get drunk, and then the other guys would produce vocals with her.
This honesty that's how that album is got next done. Level.
Dr. Dre said, "Sit Sony, I want to know this. How did you get an album done?" And I say, basically, I went to La Mondrian and got drunk when she did vocals.
I appreciate this honesty. Damn. This honesty.
That's hilarious.
Next level.
So with Joy, because I love like of your solo records. I think maybe Ray Ray might be my favorite. You know what I'm saying?
You gotta be a real fan of Ray Ray's your record.
Man, listen, we was on tour. That's we was touring. I forgot. Little brother was touring some damn where I can't remember, but we used to run that shit on the tour bus and. Joy's intro, like I did a record with Joy a couple years ago. She came to the crib, we recorded
a Ray Ray theme.
Man, listen, yeah. what?
How weird is that you still and I go. Love the internet? Because for me, Save Us is the greatest song of all time. Right. I'm what? Jacking the shit out of that song on the next Roots record. Especially Save now. Us. Especially now.
Well, yeah. That's funny. That was gonna be my record too. The way I kind of curated those records were like, when I did Instant Vintage, I was like, this is my introduction. Ray Ray, I was like, I'm just gonna have the most fun I could ever have. And then when I did The Way I See It, I was like, this is gonna tell everybody how much I was like loved Motown in the 60s. So I just really played dress up on that record. And I dressed like that for a whole year. And I had, because that record actually came out before Amy Winehouse came out. And we used to talk a lot about it. And she came out with her record and really blew up, which gave me an open gate to like really taking that record further. But that was in my records. And your little brother records though, bro, were just, I was like, what? I mean,
thank you so much.
Was it Little Brother or was it the other group out of Detroit?
Exchange.
That did the
Slum.
The Slum that did the spoof of
Cheating.
No, Bob of the Jazz Singer. Louis Armstrong.
Nah, that was Slum. That was on Fantastic. Well,
then y'all did a spoof too though, right?
They did.
We did like the Cheating, the Ron Isley, R. Kelly kind of spoof. We did that on
the show. Did you do all the voices on Cheating?
Yeah, that was all me.
Okay, because
y'all spoofs had me rolling.
Thank you, bro.
I didn't realize that you were doing both voices. I thought the straight guy was
always Fontaine.
I thought you were Ron Isley, and I thought the straight boys guys was I'm forgetting your partner's name right now. Damn.
Big Pooh?
Pooh, yes.
Nah. Oh, hell no.
Excuse me, that
didn't wasn't saying
was
shit.
A level genius, because I thought, Pooh's purposely singing like sharp. Like, I thought there was a whole science behind that thing.
No, that was me. That really makes you a genius.
Then the fact, okay.
Yeah. When little brother came on, I was like, right? I was telling everybody. I was like,
Yeah.
Thank you, man.
And you could sing, bro. You could sing.
Oh, so, man, I tried. Say, no, yeah, when we did Roots Picnic.
Yeah, so
I know
last time we were together, Raphael, last time we were all together, Fonte was singing was with you on stage for Roots.
I was confused that he was little brother because he was singing so good. I got all the way home and was like, yo.
That was him?
He was from little brother that was singing the hell out of that song.
Thank you, bro. Yeah, I hit you afterwards. I was like, yo, appreciate it. But yeah, I love that time, man. That was a fun
that
time,
man. Picnic was like, I was like in shock because, you know, I mean, because questioning, like the way they just kind of grew and everything, you just sit back and look at how somebody grow.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at these people and I'm looking at all like the African artists on the bill that all the people, the kids in Philly knew.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I would go to that stage, and I would look at the artist and look at the audience, and when I was just sitting there, like, blown away, like, wow.
Yo, you know, the highlight of your show for the whole Roots Picnic was that if you was grown, you was having a real good time, Rosh and Raphael.
Man, listen.
But speaking of that, who is that dude that was playing the drum machine with his fingers? Your
Stro
boy.
Elliott.
Stro Elliott.
That's crazy. Stro Elliott. And then Amir and them. I like flipping songs, but ever since that day, I've been trying to flip everything I do since that show.
we just wanted to do something different. It's weird you say that because, like, I was trying to figure out, like, okay, now that we've turned into Earth, like, you know, the Roots started out as a threesome, as a foursome. You know, we just, when we meet interesting characters, it's just like, all right, join the band. Oh, you play tuba? Join the band. I was actually having like a Graham Central Station moment, and I was like, yo, it'd be really dope if we had somebody that played the role of Chocolate. You mentioned Chocolate earlier. Larry Graham's former girlfriend that was playing the drum machine back in the day. And I was like, I want something. And we just happened to look on YouTube one day. At the time, Jeremy Ellis and Stro were two dudes that just played, you know, instruments. It's like we still don't know what to call them. We just say Stro Elliott on the beatbox, but it's the new. There's a whole new generation of cats that like. That are redefining what musicianship is. You know what
That's
I'm saying?
What the Roots do. Y'all been doing that for years.
We do that.
Wait, Amir, can you gonna go off of Ray Ray? Because I just wanted to ask Raphael about an unsung singer that needs to be sung. Yes. Teedra Moses, can you just talk about her for a second?
Yes.
Please.
Teedra is a weapon, man. People, she started a little later in her career. You know, she had twin boys when she was younger and she had to take care of her boys. But like so Teedra, I wrote that. I had this at my label and I had signed Truth Hurts for a second.
Yes.
And Yeah.
Okay.
So I put Truth, that record that Teedra sang Take Me was for Truth Hurts. Yeah, me too. That's what I said after she sang it.
Yeah.
So she Teedra was singing a song in the studio, and I'm looking at Teedra. You know, Teedra got these beautiful legs too, right? So
and a bottom. Yes, I'll just say
and
it.
A body,
and
like,
her body so, is like.
Boom. Yeah. So I'm sitting there. She's singing Take Me, and I'm sitting there like,
yeah.
Ain't no way Truth her singing this song. And but Teedra is like her pen is crazy. Her vocal range is crazy. If anybody wants somebody, she even wrote that song, I Want You Back on the
I Want You Back. Yeah.
Yeah. So I took the melodies from her for those records, and she just always somebody I really like to work with. If I was ever into doing a duets album, which I don't think I really am, you know, but she would be the person that I would do.
Wow, that's dope.
Man, she was my crush back in the day, man. And people
she sing and bring tears.
That's all Razzcast. I was like, fuck.
Oh.
So, man, could you have ever had guessed like how big of a song that Sky Can You Feel Me was gonna become?
Good one, Fonte.
Why wasn't it a single?
I had no clue. So there was the night that Aaliyah passed away when I wrote it. So I wrote this song with Aaliyah in mind. Everybody was calling me, and I thought my friend was in the plane too, Fatima Robinson. So I was in this kind of just different mood, and I had Ray Murray with me from Organized Noise.
From Organized Noise, yeah.
So Ray programmed the drums on that, and and Ray also titled my album Instant Vintage. I just remember him making the beat, and I just started playing those chords on the piano.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, we started writing it. It was just a song on the record, and this guy, from London, one of the biggest DJs ever.
Josh Peterson.
Yeah. He knew somebody. They took the record, they remixed it, and I saw the record at Amoeba, and it said, Sky, Can You Feel Me? Remix. But it was for sale. And I'm like, what is this? And it was extended, and it was long. And I bought it, I listened to it, and it was a look. Yeah, you know, that happened. Yeah. And I finally met the guys like 15 years later. I met him like on my last tour, and we were all talking about it. And I would go places and I would play that song, and people would just like go
lose it.
It was almost like the guy of that movie. He was like really big in Africa, and he didn't know it.
Searching for Sugarman.
Sugarman, right?
Sugarman. That's how Sky was for me.
Yeah,
like, I would go somewhere and I'd be. And people start like I was playing like
Thriller.
Like, what? And no, right. I had not a clue. And I usually can end my show with that song.
Mm.
Yes.
Nah, I love that song, man.
So wait, the version that we hear is the version that we know recognize. Which version is it? I'm confused.
Well, the version on the album is the one that you hear, but there's a version that's so long.
Yeah, they just extended the strings and.
Yeah, they just extended the strings. Yeah,
I wonder if it was Yam Who did that. The Yam Who edit. I think he did an edit of 1 hour too. Yeah,
I think
he did an edit of Make Me Hot from Little Brother.
Oh, he did that.
That's him. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ah, nice. Okay. Yeah, Ray. Giles did the same thing for us. Like back when our first record was just like some local thing, he took our record and pressed it up and just started playing it. Like he was the John Peel.
But did he sell it? Because that's a whole nother thing. Like, what's the up with that? Like, you can't just be selling the shit,
people just make copies of it. I don't think he personally sold it. Like, he just made, He was just making something for it. It'd be like me making an edit so I can DJ it that night, that sort of thing.
Right, but, I get that.
Right.
You know, because he needed 4 hours of content for his radio show.
Yeah, man.
You know, that
a long
Sky
ass
Can't
bed.
Feel Me was damn near almost like a hidden cut or like buried on side two. But mm-hmm. I always wanted to know, like, why wasn't that shit a single? Like, it's
but
frustrating.
Sky?
Yes.
I mean, people, I just feel like, but after It Never Rains and Anniversary, we were just floating. It's like whatever fell, right. Unless you were a music connoisseur, we were just floating until I'm still floating. You know what I mean? That's what I've been. I just floating. If I didn't love music, man, I'd have been done after It Never Rains.
But Raphael, where do all those romantic words come from? Those ways of saying things, like. Where does that come from? Is that like relationships or is that just, this is what I feel? Like, where does that come from?
It's just what I feel. I just say the things that the guys want to say that they can't say. But that's why I see people just, I remember I went to a show, like a West Coast hip hop show, old school hip hop show. And it was at Universal before they tore it down, the Gibson Theater. And in the back, it looked like the yard. It looked just like Chris Blood just, and when I walked through the yard, every gangster was like, yo, this song and this song means this to me. At the end of the day, at the end of the night, when you trying to be hard as bricks, at the end of the night, you probably trying to lay down with something.
Get some.
So, yeah. And, you know, we grew up with the Isley Brothers, and we grew up with Ron, and, you know, like, in my biggest, you know, Delphonics, which is a Philly group, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And those are some of my favorite groups. And the Delphonics was the coldest group because they was talking about leaving girls and girls was in love with them. They was like, didn't I blow your mind this time?
Didn't I?
My older brother said, you didn't want to take your girl to a Delphonics show because even though they was like, I thought this heart was true, girl. Now, did not think it, baby. But this time, I'm really leaving you. But every girl wanted to see him. So I think for me, it was always if you could like make them passionate songs. But honestly, I don't want to blow it for girls. But
go ahead.
I was really in love with the music. The words that I put on top, I just felt like it's the words that go on top of the song.
Ain't this some shit? This is all the love songwriters. All y'all is full of shit. This is what are we learning. It's okay. All
right, let's just rapid fire because you work with too many people.
Yes.
I mean, between D'Angelo and Total and Solange and
BGs.
Erica, you won a Grammy with Love of My Life, Mary J. Blige.
I was curious to know, Peace of Mind, the Little Dragon and Faith record, man. How'd that come about? I love that song.
Yes.
Well, I've been on Little Dragon before they really got hot in the States. So when they started coming over, because they were on my record, one of my records.
She was on Stone Rolling. She was on Stone Rolling, right?
She was on that album, yeah. Wow. She was on that record.
I gotta go back. Man.
Yeah, she was on that record. It's the name of the record. But now, man, I'm a utility guy. Quest is like, I just feel like if there's somebody who want me to, you know, to work with them and they feel like I could bring something to the project, and then that's kind of what I do. I just worked with Kanye on Donda. And I'm on the record, but nobody knows I'm on the record. It's almost like one of those Tribe things.
Everyone's like, on the record.
Just tell me the track so I can skip to it because I couldn't finish. What is one of
them? I'm not really on it. I'm just singing like something at the very end of, I think it's called Pure Soul. And
all right,
it's funny how everybody was like talking about like, he took me off the record. I've never seen people get mad because they wasn't on somebody's record.
Right.
But
the check still comes.
It's a new generation. Like our we come from the generation that following wasn't a big word.
Right.
You know, now following is the biggest word. But I just think I work with a lot of people, but I tell my nephew, who's an amazing producer, piano player, guitar player, like, just be a utility guy, a person that don't mind showing up to work with somebody that's really good.
Yeah.
You know, for me, and that's what it is for me. I just like if I see you and you're like, yo, I'm in the studio tonight, bring your bass, I'm coming. I'm showing up. I don't know what you're doing, and I don't care. I know it's you. And when I leave, if it come out, cool. If it don't, I had an experience and I learned. Like, I learned from working with different people. So I'm working with Snoop a lot, too. And and it's like, yeah. But it's so many different people that come through this, like great producers, new musicians, right. new people. You see people running different programs. Like when I came to your show, I spent more time looking at that kid. That dude was making the beats.
Strong, uh-huh. man.
I was like glued on this dude. When I left, I was like, I just seen all these lights on my head and these drum machines. I'm like, to me, that's what the music is about. Like, who can I learn from? Like, you, I play drums on records. I mimic you on drums. It never sound like you because I'm not you, but people like the beats. Like, I don't program good drums, but I play, if my drum set could sound, I got a drum set that finally sounds like an SP-12. It's your drum set that, one of the drum sets that you, it's one of your drum sets
right.
that one of my friends who's an artist, he took your drum set and he painted it to look like my guitar. So it was in my room for like a year. My engineer took it out and he, man, he set it up. That drum is the best drum set sound ever had.
You want to know why? I told them, see, they wanted to like, you know, we got these, we got a connect in Japan and we're going to use the hollow wood of this particular forest and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, nah, I said, what do y'all use for like them cheap high school sets? And they're like, oh, you don't want that, Quest. You want these hollow trees and da-da-da-da-da. And I was like, no, I want the throwaway trashy shit that y'all hate. And I was trying to tell them that, like, the breakbeats we grew up on was done on the cheapest.
It's done on cheap shit, yeah.
Yeah, like a Sears drum set, that sort of thing. And they tried to talk me out of it. And I said, and I want you to sell it cheap, too, because, you know, they're like, our bottom line is if we sell a drum set for $200, then we can't sell this one for $4,000. I was like, no, it's going to be like a drug deal. Like, you're going to give them a taste and get them hooked. Like, you get a kid, a 5 or 6 year old, a drum set for $200 and it sounds dope. Then when they turn 13, 14, they're going to be drummers. And
I need a couple of those in my life. I got one.
I'll give it to you. I mean, because I'm trying to get rid of these boxes and my girlfriend will gladly welcome that request to make less space in the house.
I have room.
I can't drums, give them
we,
away.
We play. I played those drums, and I went back into the control booth. I was like, "What?
Sound like breakbeats? Yes,
like breakbeats. What it. I've been chasing my whole life."
All right, working with Total.
Yes. You gave them some jams, now. Them shit, them whole day.
No, just this jamming.
They go.
One, I want to know how taxing was the process to produce Total, but more than that, like, how easy was it as far as puff breathing down your neck for magic? And you gave them really kind of two hits. Yeah,
this is funny. So I didn't really want to do it.
Yeah, I think.
Because I didn't know what I could, I didn't know what I could do. You know what I mean? Like, you got to know if you could pull it off. So Jocelyn Cooper at the time was a publisher at Midnight Music.
Yeah.
And so she was telling me Puff was looking for me. So I was basically running from Puff. I was like,
everyone runs away from Puff.
I was not answering the phone and nothing. Right. So Jocelyn called me like, hey, Ray, I got Puff on the phone.
Aww.
Put you on the spot. Right.
And so... So this is even the funny part. This is what Puff says. You gotta love Puff for this. Puff say, man, I really think you could do something with this group, man. Like, right down your alley. Like, they not really singers. They something like you.
That's a neg and a half.
The shade.
Classic. Oh. I was like this. Okay. I mean, I never said I was Luther.
Right.
Never.
Right.
Definitely. Like that, you know, I'm like, oh, you got a point. I sing to make it work. But what he meant is, like, I make things work.
Right.
And so when he said that, once he got me on the phone, when they came out, that girl, Pam.
Right.
She has so much swag and attitude. And I think they thought they were so much under the gun. They sung with so much personality that it was just flying off the tape. You know what I mean? They sung the tape.
Oh, I bet Pam sing with her sunglasses on, like.
Oh yeah, Pam is like, she's like,
I've never seen Pam's eyes in my life.
You know, she just like,
ever. I wouldn't know Pam if she walked in my house right now.
She looked the same.
She looked the same.
She looked the same.
It actually being up, being a really a fun project. And like I said, I had Bonnie Boyer actually vocal coaching them too.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's dope. Nah, Kissing You to Jam. I love that song,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
What was the other one? Do They Think About Us?
Do You Think About Us?
Yeah. Okay. Now, I was going to ask a music supervision, scoring, composing situation. It seems like whenever you jumped into the game that you were really selective. I thought that like Insecure was your first, but like you even did Underground, which is impressive. Could you talk about like why you went that way and do? Are you selective and how you? Because I mean, Lovecraft, like.
And well, is Laura your official partner when you do TV scoring?
Sometime. We do a lot of projects together. She do a lot on her own. I know she did some stuff with you guys too. She got a bigger picture in the roots in her studio.
Yeah. You actually worked with a good friend of mine before, my man Deshaun, Daniel Crawford. That's my man.
Daniel,
man.
Yeah. Yeah, Daniel played in my band. Yeah. Piano teachers. All my friends are that play keyboards are my piano teachers. I'm playing piano like as good as I can, a lot. But
Daniel Crawford that makes the remixes and all that stuff.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Wait, you do know that Daniel also can do what Stro does, right?
You know what? I have seen it. I've seen it, but he kind of sneaks and does it around me. He don't do it like I've seen him. I've seen him do it before, and I was like. No, this is what he does. He goes like, I'm like, who's the drummer? He's like, oh, that's me. I was just like this. And then it goes away. But when I saw your guy do it, it was like a whole
show.
Like,
he plays it up.
No, Daniel's in that first generation. I couldn't get him. So then it was like, who else? Oh, Stro. But Daniel's like one of the first guys I saw like play drums and keys at the same time. Yeah, I'm like,
bass,
how are you doing that?
Laura's my partner on a lot of stuff. We did Lovecraft. We did Underground, we did a couple other little flicks, and I was really just getting my feet. You get my feet in, and Laura went to. She's like a professor at a school, so it was kind of great going up being with her because I was learning from her at the same time. You know, I'm like a sponge. I like to be around people I could learn from.
Mm-hmm. What's Laura's role? Just for us,
Laura Partman. She's a string composer.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay.
But she pulled me into the academy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like she got power, you know.
Yeah.
And walks and it like really, she talks it.
Yeah, she's really good. And I mean, you can't really be selective in that business, you know, if you want to get in.
Really?
But at a certain point, you can. I just happen to get some great phone calls.
So tell me about the Lovecraft phone call and the Underground phone call.
Because Misha Green is.
Yes.
She did.
Right.
Misha Green did Underground
and
Underground.
Lovecraft, right.
So it's like once you're on the team, if they think you can handle it, they call you and they call us as a team and we jumped right on it. And with Insecure, I was working with Solange.
She said you did all the work. I think that's what did she tell us that? She was like,
who
said
that? So, yeah.
Solange.
Solange is funny because when I was doing Insecure, I would be working on the song and Solange would be like, oh, that's for my album. and she would just take it and I'd be like, yo, but I think it's in the show. Not now. Be kind of gone. So yeah, I just felt like with music, you just have to be able to, you know, I'm sure you guys all experienced that with radio, being in radio, whatever we in. We all have to diversify and do different things.
Honey.
I just felt like in music, we all have the knucklehead status of he's a musician, he can't be on time, he can't do this. And I kind of want to get rid of that before somebody started believing that I was that person. And in film and television, if they need a pink elephant on Sunday, you have to deliver it.
You deliver it, yeah.
That's why I have my setup right here in this room. I just pull it out, boom, boom, and just start working. So I start to really enjoy it now. I didn't enjoy it at first. I was just trying to be a part of it because I liked watching like Donny Hathaway used to score. He scored this film.
He did Maude. He did
Maude. Come Back Charleston, Come back, Charleston, Charleston Blue. Blues.
Okay, so. You've worked with a lot of your heroes, like Earth, Wind & Fire. I know you worked with the Bee Gees. I think, it was Earth, Wind & Fire, the Bee Gees. I forget.
Whitney
someone
Houston.
Else someone else. Well, you worked with Whitney Houston. Is there a classic artist that you almost work with that it didn't go down?
Yeah, man. Eddie Kendricks.
What?
Wow. Are you serious?
Wow.
Yeah, we was I did this song called Leaving.
Yeah, yeah. On Sons of Soul.
He was gonna sing that song with me.
Oh wow.
Don't you hear that part though? Da, 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 da. So it going on. So when I sing that one part, it sound like the ghost of Eddie Kendrick, because it don't sound like me when I do that one part. I'm like, yo, when I heard it back, I'm like, that's not me. That feels like just like it's him on that one part. Yeah, Eddie Kendrick is, because my older brother, Randy, he's like Eddie Kendrick's, and that's his favorite, and that's one of my favorite. And,
I know you did some on one of those Lionel Richie records. What was it like working with
him? I first toured with Sheila after the Under the Trey Moon tour.
When she opened for Lionel. Yes.
She opened up for Lionel on the it wasn't Outrageous. It was Dancing on the Ceiling tour.
Mm-hmm.
After Outrageous.
It was, oh, yeah. He won all the Grammys. All the Grammys. Yeah.
Yeah. So I toured with Lionel. Now, so we call him Lionel B. So we were always pretty much close. And I did this one song on Lionel. But Lionel's like us. Lionel's a great storyteller. He'll tell you, he's like, if you don't have any stories, then you can't talk to me.
Ooh.
You need stories. He said, who wants to work with an A&R guy or an artist or a person that doesn't have any stories? But, you know,
damn,
we had stories because we toured with different people. And, you know, me touring with NWA and hanging out with Ice Cube every day, you know, and Ice Cube telling me stuff like, you know, I want to make movies. I'm gonna make movies, and then to watch him make next Friday.
Right.
I'm like, I heard him say that early in his career, then watch him do it.
Did you go to those NWA pool parties? Damn.
No. I went to the water gun parties when everybody just run around the hotel, just like cheap Motel Sixes, like firing off water guns and
right.
Was that in the all movie? That stuff, I feel yeah. familiar.
Ah, man.
It wasn't a movie.
Okay.
I wanted to ask you, man, you had a record, because I was thinking about you were talking about your scoring career and like stuff with Insecure and everything. It's a record you just dropped. I think it was last year, maybe year for last. The Is It Good? Is good to you? Is good to me? Bro, like, what's the word on that? I love that song, man. Like,
yeah, well, that was one of the songs I put in Insecure, and it was very... you know, those songs, when you put them on the score, they're very low. Mm. So Issa Rae heard it, and she said, can you go back and make a song to that? So then I just went back, and then I just put a verse on it. Because at first, it was just saying, is it good to you? Is it good to me? And I did that, and like, cause during the pandemic, I moved to Portland, Oregon.
Oh, wow. Why Portland?
Because I caught COVID, and I was like, I'm not going to be in dusty-ass L.A.
Hey! We all right over here.
But he I'm chose going Portland, to... Oregon.
Yeah.
I'm Portland's going to my Oregon. All-time favorite city. So, you know.
Yeah,
you
know. Yeah, I know. People tell me that, you know, I see all the venues you play. My best friend is Brian Grant. He just played for the Trailblazers.
Right.
So I've been going out there for years. So I got a place out there so I can hike, and it's just nothing but trees. So you're just walking through these trees, getting all this oxygen. And in like in a month, I got my smell and my taste back. And I just got back to L.A., I just got a place there besides my studio. I was staying in my studio, like, stay there, like, for, like, what, 3 months? 3 months ago? I've been in Portland the whole time.
Wow.
And I found a nice studio to record at, bro. I found studios. It's inexpensive to record at. It's a lot of musicians out there that's untapped and nobody know about.
I'm trying to tell the world, Portland is where it's at. They don't. You see, yo, man,
every morning, bro, I got a 1985 Volvo wagon, bro. I'll be out there.
You see it. I'm not far behind you. When I get my money right, yo, I'm getting me a spot in Portland.
Oh, I'm telling you.
Everywhere. Hey, Raphael, on a side note, what made you lock your hair? I was always curious.
Donald Trump.
Word? Explain.
Word. Yeah, what happened was I was watching the news earlier on. He was talking to him, and I was like, this shit sounds crazy. And I was just like,
just
I was watching the news, and before I knew it, my whole head was twisted.
Anxiety.
How about you took a word about anxiety twist?
Anxiety.
Yo.
That's wow. Real. Yo, wait a minute. Shit. Yo.
I was just twisted watching the news going like,
fuck.
What?
Wait a minute. What? I got to turn the white lights on. You're right.
That's when you started to, Amir?
In the pandemic. I don't know why. I just...
Yeah, you've been double strand twisting.
If you look at my album, my last album cover of Jimmy Lee.
Yes.
It looks like my hair is short, but there's little tiny, tiny balls on my hair. That's how short it was when I was twisting my scalp watching them. Then before you knew it, I was growing them. That's what happened.
Anxiety.
That's a cool story.
That is what happened.
The one good thing that Donald Trump did. Thank you.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you've not done that you wished to do?
I really want to live in Europe for a minute. I've been, I don't know really where I want to live. I kind of want to go somewhere and, I kind of want to make a record with a symphony, but not a large symphony with like, because when I listened to the Delphonics, I always felt like they had a drummer like you.
Mm-hmm.
They had a bass player that was like good as hell,
mm-hmm.
but they had an orchestra that was
right.
Right by the book. So I've always wanted to make that record, but not the big, big, giant, just like, you know, something that you can't ever imagine having on a tour, but just something like that would have, but just, I always wanted to make that record when I can, I sort of did it when I had Spanky and people where I could write on the spot. I could just sing parts to people.
Right.
And we make the record that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like without just sitting back and writing, kind of sit back and play and then go, okay, you do this, you do this, you do this, and then go write the words and have people kind of want to do that. Because I think we're living in this experimental phase where nobody really understands streaming or how are we making money or any of that. And, you know, we're so happy about making pennies and people are all about, like, you know, people holding up gold albums talking about they streamed a million. He goes a million, a plaque. It's really confusing right now to me. Mm-hmm. So I just think the only thing we have left is creativity. I think we should be at the top of creativity and not don't worry about what everybody else is doing and don't knock any younger kids or anything like that. But, you know, like yourself, just bringing light with that, you know, I don't know.
No, I feel you.
If you notice, but like that documentary of that guy that hosted the soul.
Tony Lawrence.
That guy, mm-hmm. and listening to him and his struggle to get that thing to fly, and it still didn't come out.
Mm-hmm.
But all of those people until now, we might as well just kind of just create. And so I think for me, I just want to just, you know, create. I kind of want to take out a tour where I'm like, it's just me. I'm working on a tour called a recital where it's me just playing piano and bass and telling my stories. Now, because the reason why it's called recital is because I can't play the piano that good. I just can play good enough to like for my songs and make mistakes. So I'll be making mistakes, but most of it be me talking about my career, like this interview that we're doing.
Like a one-man show. I'm there for that. Yeah. I love that.
You know what I mean? So,
VH1 storyteller shit.
I always wanted to tour like a comedian with a chair and a glass and some water and bring all the money home.
Mm. There you go.
Wait, Raphael. Doing a versus? I was just
a versus.
Yes.
Yeah. Who would you go against in the versus?
Who could go?
They had me going against D'Angelo, right? I was supposed to do that.
He the only one that did a versus. Love him, but that wasn't no versus.
No, but I didn't do it because it was supposed to be. They wanted to be
Maxwell.
All, I know
it was probably be Maxwell and you.
It was Maxwell.
It was supposed to be Maxwell and him.
Right.
He didn't want to do it, but I don't know. I like versus for it's just fun, it's entertaining.
But who could?
I love it.
Who could sit on stage with you?
See, if your legacy were more tighter with the Tonys, I would have loved to seen a live Tony Mincondition thing.
Mincondition?
I would have loved to seen it. I think that would
have been... Every time Chris Webber sees me, he loves Mincondition. He's like, yeah, buddy, I'm going to get you on the stage with Mincondition and see what you do. Chris Webber loves Mincondition. So he's always trying to put Stokely against me. Chris is my boy.
That's a good
but like
versus,
no,
though.
Honestly, but Stokely is my boy.
Stokely's a monster, like, man.
Right, so you could do the Mincondition in the Stokely records and the Raphael and the Tony records. You welcome.
Yeah, see, Stokely is like I tell people Stokely sings circles around anybody.
Anybody,
he
yeah.
He does.
And then you know Stokely the kind of person you'll be like in France and somebody be like, Hey, Stokely's down the street doing a fusion gig on drums.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
And then he's like, Stokely Carmichael. So his dad was a black college professor. He's like this intellect and everything. I'll be like, every time I talk to him, I'm like, hey, secret smart guy.
Oh, I was going to ask just about the, with, you know, with the Tonys, you know, with you guys breaking up. But, you know, y'all actually family. How does that play in your family dynamic? Like, is it Thanksgiving? Is it cool? Is it smoke? Like, how do y'all handle each other in real life?
Man, our traditional Thanksgiving has been over for so long. Yeah. I don't even think families have traditional Thanksgiving anymore.
But, Indigenous people eat this day.
Yeah, I think for us, my father always wanted to see us get together and do something. And I think what we're going to do is we're going to get together, me, Dwayne, and Tim. Because, you know, we're pretty much a group in the beginning that wasn't really R&B. We were more like the Black Police. Mm-hmm. And we're going to get together and do like
a trio record?
Kind of like a farewell, like, thank you
please,
tour
please.
To thank people. You. We're going to do that. I was at Dwayne last night. If you look on his Facebook, Dwayne can't go anywhere
he don't do the
without
gram,
playing
yeah,
Let's
yeah,
Get
yeah,
Down.
Yeah, damn.
Without so, what?
If you see Dwayne, he's going to be singing Whatever You Want or Let's Get Down or singing Hey, The Blues Is All Right. Dwayne is like an old man just running around singing like the same song.
Hey, I liked his single. He had a dope single. Damn, if I can remember, he had a dope single.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, Dwayne, he's not going to miss the performance. So last night I was in San Francisco before I got to New York. We're sitting in this club called Black Cat. These guys up there killing it. I mean, killing everything. We're sitting in the audience with the mayor of San Francisco and this young lady and it's her friends. And at the end of the night, Dwayne grabs the guitar from this guy from the Nationals and the piano player and start playing Let's Get Down and get on the mic. Isn't that I like to call my brother up? So then we're doing two verses. I'm embarrassed because we're doing two verses of Let's Get Down after these dudes was up there playing Coltrane. And I'm like, come on, Wayne. But I guess that's my introduction of like of telling people that we are about to get together and do our farewell and like you know thank people for your support and we're actually gonna do like we're gonna do an instrument we're gonna put out four songs and it's gonna be an instrumental record just instrumentals almost like you know Summer Madness and Brick and stuff like that and then because we never performed the last album House of Music anyway we're gonna get together and learn that album. And then give people like three or four instrumental songs. That's the plan. And this is the first place I said it, but this is.
Dog, I'm going to amplify this shit.
Yeah, man.
No,
I would love to see y'all do Wild Child live, man. That was my record.
Yeah. That was our thing. Even when we did that record, that's the record when they said, you do your side of the record and I'll do mine. And even though I did that record, I went back and got Dwayne and said, hey, bro, you got to sing on this part of the record. He was like, of course. But I found out the reason why we didn't this is the funny thing. You're gonna dig this because I was always trying to figure out, like, what did I do to these guys, you know, that they didn't want to record a record with me? Because my dad came over and he was like, where everybody at? I said, I didn't want to break his heart. And my dad passed away about 5 years ago. And I said, I don't know, Dad. They just decided they wanted to record their side of the record on their own. So he said, are you going to be all right? So I just have to make my dad feel good. I said, you know, because he thought I was on my own. And I should say like Muhammad Ali reference to him. I'm like, Dad, I'm like Ali. I flow like a butterfly, sting like a bee. And my dad, he starts smiling when I say that because I just want to make him feel. But honestly, I didn't know what the hell I was going to do. Mm-hmm. But I had figured it out. And so I asked Tim, I said, so, man, what did I do to you, man? Like, what did I do? Like, I don't really understand. Like, I understand what y'all did to me. I understand what they did to me. It was just like, you know, we just had regular band issues when you don't have enough money. Every black band that don't have enough money, their problem is money most of the time. So what happened was I figured it out because they never told me. Every time we did an album, when you heard strings on an album, they cost $40,000 to $25,000, $30,000 a song.
I was going to ask about Claire Fisher.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's me. I would spend all the money in the production. The music. I put the money on in the film.
Right.
You know? And so they didn't want to record me because they was like, he gonna spend all the money.
Never had the sentence.
I was like, I got it. But they never told me. Yeah. I just figured it out.
Look, you need to watch Metallica's Some Kind of Monster.
Mm.
And I want y'all that for y'all, because you'll be really shocked on how the smallest issue can cause the biggest problems in a group. And then when the hindsight, when you talk about it, it'll be like, yo, remember that time you stole my Ritz crackers and said that you didn't, and I saw it in your bag? That's why I ain't talk to you. You know, it's...
Yeah, I mean,
like
actually,
it's ironic that you talk
about Metallica, because I told Dwayne, I said, bro, like Metallica, I said, when we come on stage, I said, my mic is going to be far right, your mic is going to be far left, or you're going to be right, I'm going to be left, and Tim is going to be right in the middle. And I said, we're going to make this shit look like Metallica. And we're going to have a choir of like 16 people and a keyboard player to the side. And they're going to be singing backgrounds. We're going to just be playing these instrumentals. I said, it's going to have to feel like Metallica. Because, you know, when we recorded some of our albums, mm-hmm. like Sons of Soul, Metallica was in it, was there too. They were at Sausalito at
Record Plant.
Plant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And so I was hanging out with Metallica, like, you know, all the times when they would play shows in New York, I would go hang out with them. So we have a lot of, you know, in common with Metallica, and those little petty things, like you said,
mm-hmm.
it's definitely, we probably have some of the most silliest reasons.
Yep.
And y'all family.
You'll
so.
Be shocked at what little communication could do. And, you know, I will admit that, you know, me and a certain member are probably as close now as we were, you know, it's weird that we did this operation for 19 years. Almost without communicating with each other.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. You know.
No, me and people the same way. We didn't really become friends to make a little watch.
You got to communicate. Like, that's so same thing.
You got to communicate. So I mean, important. I was with my brother last night, and I just said, bro, look, if it wasn't for you bringing all them records and playing all those Ernie Isley solos and playing all those Larry Graham records and put me on the Larry, I wouldn't be the person who I was today.
Right.
That's
simple
a lot.
And plain. But when, something about getting that record deal and
shit changed.
And start going backstage, and you'll be like, hello, hold on, I'll be back. And you start, everybody start getting new friends, and all of a sudden you're like,
right.
And then you, all of a sudden you like the Five Heartbeats. You're like, Five Heartbeats, front and center.
Right.
Wait. Flash, it's lonely at the top.
Wait, I got two more questions, and then I got to go. But, well, you we kind of brought up one thing. You brought up one thing, which was, did you, when Claire Fisher did the strings for Anniversary, did you get to meet him, or you just sent him the tapes, and then he sent it back?
I was with him every time he worked with me.
What else did he do besides Anniversary?
He did a song that we have called on the Revival album that we never put out. It's called Share Your Love With Me, and it's ridiculous.
Wait, you have an unused Claire Fisher song? Motherfucker, what?
It's
on cassette, bro. I don't think we can find the multi-tapes. And if I could find it, I'll send it to you.
You can just freaking let a Claire Fisher song go unscathed?
And, bro, he like, I met Claire even in the last. So then I did Claire the song we were talking about with TJ Moses, Take Me.
Yes.
That's Claire, too.
Wow. To our listeners, Claire Fisher is a string arranger, all the Prince stuff that we love.
Ask Rufus.
And Chaka Khan. Ask Rufus, yeah. Like, Switch, look up Reaching for Tomorrow. That's probably, like, one of my favorite Claire Fisher moments. But, you know, he had to push me away with the Jacksons. And he really turned, like, a lot of, like, black music into really, like, lush arrangements. Steve and I got to work with... Claire's son Brent on the Elvis Costello record. Claire, actually, the last thing that Claire did before he passed away was really Love. Like, I know that he wrote the string arrangements for D'Angelo, but his son finished and executed it. Wow. Like, at the time he was doing it, he passed away, but that was one of the last things he worked on. the last thing I wanted to ask you, just in general, like in your canon, in your songwriting canon, what's the fastest song that you wrote that was like popular with us? Like, oh, I wrote that song in 3 minutes.
Popular with you. Probably was the blues as far as it, that was.
Ah.
It just wrote itself?
Yeah.
Just kind of wrote itself, yeah.
Okay, like, okay. And what was the struggle song? What was the song that like?
All of them.
Like you really just like fight to the finish.
I think the struggle song, it wasn't a single, but we used to have this thing where our album would be done and then
that last
the
one.
Label would say, now we need a single.
Right, okay.
So that single was If I Had No Loot. Blues was that. But the song that I had a problem with was Coming Into the Man of Who I Was. It was probably Blind Man.
What?
Yeah.
I know that song.
Blind Man. Yeah.
Really? Yeah, because Blind Man was a song that I felt like it would have been a voice like Bobby Blue Bland.
Right.
And I was singing all those kiddie songs, you know, like, da, 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 da. And all of a sudden I had to say the first lyric in that song was like, look at here, I'm still standing. That's the Teddy Pendergrass line. You know, like, you can't say right. Look at here with the voice I've been singing with the albums before that. So I wrote it, and when I got to the mic, I walked to the mic, and I was like, look at here. I was like, hold on. I told Drew, I was like, hold on, shit. That's just not going to work. So I stood back, and I looked at my shadow on the floor, and I had a conversation, and I was like, you gotta pull from within. You got to pull all these other different energies and spirits from these people. And that song, I struggle with. But one after I did Leaving in that song, I sort of like, my sister passed away. And my sister got hit by this car. My sister was a great blues singer. And she had a strong voice like Millie Jackson and Aretha. And just, I'm talking about, my sister could sing any type of soul song. And she was a parole officer. She graduated from, you know, college, had degrees, owned a lot of property. And until my sister used to sing like the Al Green's version of I Can't Get Next to You, like below it. Mm-hmm. And when my sister passed away, I felt like her spirit just kind of got into me. And after that, I started singing better. I started singing better after that. And that was after my sister died when I was in the hospital singing It Never Rains.
Damn.
What?
Yeah. And then I went to the hospital. And they pulled her off the machine. They just wouldn't pull her off the machine at that point. They pulled her off the machine, and I went back to the studio, and I started recording those songs. And, but then my life for singing, it just after that sort of changed. But I never really got comfortable singing vocally until really The Way I See It.
Wow.
Until the 60s album.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Man, I was going to ask before we go on Instant Vintage, the High Tech interludes, how did y'all hook up? I thought it was so dope that you reached out to him, man.
Wow.
Yeah, because, I mean, like I said, my hip-hop thread goes deep, you know what I mean? Like, and I just hit High Tech. I was like, bro, I'm doing these interludes, and it'd be so sick if I could drop three or few High Tech joints right in the middle of everything, you know? Because he would just, yeah, I just always love, you know, High Tech, because I could play bass to it, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, all I ever need is beats, man. Beats and I can go all day. If somebody give me a beat and I'm like more of like an MC on the bass. Like I could just play bass lines all day and I could come up with a melody because it's, and even in, I was in Trinidad when we did the Slow Wine album, the Tonys was over there. And this guy told me, he said, man, you know, in Africa, it's, we all speak through drums, right? Rhythm. Mm-hmm. We all speak through drums. Drums is our thing. So drums and bass just sing to people. And that's why with all this different music, it's really, you know, drums and bass. And I feel like even when I did Still Ray, it's just really drums and bass in keys, right? But it's the way those drums sounds with people always want to rhyme over them. I can't find the multi-tracks to give them to nobody, so.
Say no more, Ray Wiggins. I will send you some tracks. Great. No.
Please.
That is.
Please.
No, dog. It ain't nothing for that.
Premier, send me some of the boxes with them drum sets in them, bro.
I got you. I'll text you. I got you. Wait, it just hit me. You know what? Fonte just hit me to something like a couple years back, and I just got trapped inside of this hole. I don't know if you saw that playlist I gave you, Fonte.
Oh, the Lick House? Hell
Tony's
yeah.
Tony's Lick House music.
Come on, huh? Yes, sir.
I feel like even more than go-go, Liquor House music is the undiscovered gem of R&B music, like Sir Charles Jones and all, like
Mel Waiters, yeah, like, oh, yeah.
Down home, like Wade.
It's the last place white people ain't took over.
Yo, I feel like Ray, you need to
do a Liquor House.
Find the thin line between Liquor House music and
gospel quartet. Yeah, yep, I'm with
that's,
you.
Y'all send it to me. Let me send me the list. Let me hear.
Yes, I will. Oh God,
Marvin Cease, Candy Liquor, like it's all just.
Floyd
I mean,
Taylor,
some people call
Bill.
It blues. Yes, come yes. on, come on.
Like that Malico Records, real cheap sounding karaoke R&B, but it's my favorite shit of all. I've been
and
listening.
And it's genius.
Are you talking about like songs like "The Bitch Get It All" and all them songs? The bitch get it off.
Yes,
that's what.
Yes, 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 indeed. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yo,
Stan Mosley.
Yo, the bitch get. Yo, my ex girlfriend parents. I've been listening to that shit for like 15, 20. Yo, I got a whole list of it.
Yes.
And, yo, I'll be in the phone. Yo, they're going to take that over too pretty soon. These dudes be like 25 wearing old school hats.
Yes.
So are you talking about, so you ever heard of Theotis?
Theotis Ely, that's my
Theotis
man.
Is good
that's
part.
My yes. man. Yeah,
Theotis Ely,
that's but my guy.
So Theotis used to sing.
Stand up in it.
Told me to
stand
put step in it.
Stand up in it. You got to stand up.
Stand up dude played in my sister's band. My sister blues band. Theotis was her guitar player.
Wow. What?
I
wow.
know
that's right. Yeah, because it's Oakland.
Theotis
yeah,
been knowing me okay. since I was like 8 years old, bro.
Wait, there's a Liquor House moving in Oakland as well.
Man, it's universal.
Well, Theotis lives in Atlanta now.
He lives in Atlanta. Yeah, yeah.
Stand wow. up in it. Yeah, stand up. The stand up man is my friend. He's an older guy.
His
but...
stepdaughter's like real a longtime fan of ours. Like good friend of mine. Like he came out. He came out to a little brother show. He came back and we was doing Get Back. He what? Came out and kicked it with us.
Damn,
straight up.
That's dope.
Yeah, man.
Yo, but them horns, those cheap horns, I cannot take. But I'll be definitely.
There's a way. There's a way to add your twist to it. But it's just like, for me, it's the most, Fonte's right. It's the last sort of ungentrified movement of black music that we have. And
right. But then Raphael do it and it's going to get gentrified right after that.
No,
I'm going to tell you who's going to end up doing it first.
I know. Oh, you said a white artist. I said, I know Michael
Kid
Archer's
Rock.
Next to be on Malico.
Nope, it's gonna be Miley Cyrus' dad.
Ooh. Oh God! Word. You think Billy gonna? Billy Ray. You think he gonna do this? Oh wow!
Damn, he Billy Ray gonna start singing about Jody?
It's nah, a rap. Nah,
it's a rap. I can't take it. I can't
That's
take
the
it.
That's the achy breaky man. That's a rap.
Big colonizer energy.
Ray, I want to thank you. Thank you for doing. We've been begging for this episode for so long, man. Thank
yeah,
you
we
so
wanted
much
it
for
all in person. Hey, can I just ask you? As a fan, I feel like you've just done so much for us. Is there anything we could do for you? I've never asked
and
anybody
you know
that.
What?
Buy his records,
you know
play
I'm
his
glad
video
you
games.
All, everybody's. I'll be around when this Tony's project comes out.
Uh-huh.
Like I'm gonna start bringing out a couple artists pretty soon myself. And these artists they're gonna be pretty much underground artists. But I just feel like when that happens with the platforms that you guys have, you guys are already doing so much with the platforms and. And all we need is the platforms for people to be heard.
That's
I feel
easy.
Like we're going back.
Absolutely.
That's it. And when we come to town, just buy tickets. That's it.
Okay, we got them, right, y'all? Okay, they said yeah.
Yes, we got
because,
them.
Yeah. There's a t-shirt out there that says that niggas don't buy tickets. I didn't make it. But
we do, though. Because if we didn't, don't.
Essence Fest. Nah, we
exactly.
We turn
Essence
up.
Essence Fest, the Super yeah. Fest, the
Roots
River
Picnic.
Fest. Listen.
Right.
Well, no.
Well, I keep my joint.
I saw that.
What you saying,
Lion? I saw that. You're right. No, it's black. You're right. It is. Yes.
Yeah, we ain't gentrified Roots Picnic yet. Roots Picnic and Broccoli is still.
It's 80-20. 80-20. We killing it. 80-20.
Hey, man. That's because we keep the price under $100. Sorry.
Oh, yes.
That's it.
You know what I'm saying?
That's the key.
We got generational wealth, so help us.
Yes. This is not
that's the key.
Coachella. I'm not charging $1,000 to get in to some shit. Yo, man, I want to thank you. And this has been an amazing episode. This is definitely a 2-part episode.
Wow, this is great.
I know it is.
Oh, yeah.
A big fan of yours, and, you know, this is everything I could ask for. And I'm really mind blown how many things we have in common. Like, now I'm going to listen to Larry Graham a whole nother way, man. But, no, thank you for doing the show.
Oh, bro, like, Larry is the Bible for us.
Yes.
When we come out, we thinking about playing Today as our opening song.
Dog, there you go. There you go. Rafael Saadiq, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, thank you, guys.
Thank this you.
Quest thank love. You, bro. Thanks for all the music, man, for real.
Thank
Much
you.
Appreciated, bro.
Thank you. Thank you, too, man. Thank you. Good seeing you again.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
And sorry I got you fired.
It's all right. It was breaking. Look where I am today. Talking to you for 3 hours. I couldn't do that on Black.
You with the best. You with the best right here. You in the best hands right
You're
here.
Right.
And my man, how you doing at the bottom? And then get said hi, hello.
She holds this together. Steve's like a longtime Electric Lady. Steve probably worked on Untitled. Like,
I was in the room when that was when Dean and Ray were recording that song up in C, up in Studio C.
That's right. Was that I remember C? Now. I'm looking at you like, yeah,
yes,
of course. And then, so were you in the room when D was like, and went talking about he was like when a cat was making this moaning noise. You was in the room,
Jimmy,
and D goes like, "Hey, Jimmy," and everybody was like, "Yeah, Jimmy," and I was like, ain't no goddamn Jimmy, that cat hungry.
Raphael always keeping it real.
Yeah. Man, we had 3 grilled cheese sandwiches, all those extra bacon that they put in it. The Nigga. Cat was watching us eat.
It's over.
The cat
it's
wants over. Some food.
Wait, Ray, you don't even get it. You don't even get it. The amount of bacon references I got for Steve. The fact that you brought that up, even on my audiobook, which I just finished like fucking half hour ago, I credited Steve for bacon.
Dude, we used to be in the studio and we would eat, we would smoke.
Eat bacon.
And D would be like, yeah, wait, I'm gonna eat some more on the healthy side from this other restaurant. So this not Waverly. So I'm like, what you order? He like, yeah, I'm gonna order a burger. I'm like, a burger? So, but at the Waverly, we would go get like a grilled cheese and the bacon come in it, right?
Right.
D would say, can I get extra bacon? I'm like, extra bacon? The bacon is already filled in that tin thing with bacon.
Steve.
Yo, but for, all right, I know, bacon.
This is the
I
greatest
know,
moment but, in the history of this podcast.
Yo, but Ray.
Forget Untitled. All I remember is the bacon.
Dog. Voodoo was nothing but Bacon Fest. That's how he got his summer body, eating bacon and nothing else.
That was the original title of the record, actually.
I've credited Steve on most albums with bacon because, you know, spinach is the Popeye, old boy was just like, yo, I need a break.
You know, it's so crazy.
Keto before keto.
I'm about to say, most of the earthy people do just think y'all didn't even eat pork. I'm in shock over here. Like,
oh, you from down south. You from Virginia, bro.
What the hell? And you too, Raphael? What the heck?
He was making it up.
Yo, Raphael, you remember recording Untitled, though? You guys were standing in front of the console. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And not on the engineer side, on the other side, like in between the console and the window to the live room. And you guys were playing, you were on bass and D was on guitar or no, vice versa. I don't remember now, but.
Yeah, well, I was on guitar. He was playing piano, I think.
Oh, so you played bass and guitar on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But you were standing in front of the console. It was like one of my first gigs. I was like, whoa. Yes. But, and then we ate bacon.
I remember the tape ran out. Mm-hmm. And D was like, y'all was going to change the reel so we could finish it. And I was like, nah, it's finished. Don't just leave it like that.
Yeah.
And just call it. And then the dad said Untitled. And I was like, just call it Untitled.
Oh, and that I was like, abrupt finish. Okay.
Then I was like, then I was like, when you leave, I said, when I left, I said, you just got to scream at the end of the record. You got to scream. He's like, he said, yeah, we're going to do the video. So I told my boys, like, we did this song. I said, it's good, but I like the Spanish joint the best. That was my favorite joint on the whole album. So I didn't think Untitled was a single. So they put it out and the video came out. My boy was like, hey, it's a good thing you ain't in the video. You only had one part you could have did.
Yeah, but if I recall at the time, y'all both had body around that time. So
and everybody just say, yo, the only reason you think that song was popular because he was naked. And I was like, I said, if it was whack, he couldn't have been naked.
Right. Exactly. Right. That's true.
Like when Maxwell was naked with that rubber ducky in the bathtub. That
the didn't cops work. Knocking. Was that the cops knocking?
That didn't work.
Nah, that was it was Coco Whenever, Pure, the luxury okay. Coco Pure oh,
yeah,
joint.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't. You got to ask some weapons to do that so kind right. of song naked.
You know? You are so right. Yeah.
He said rubber ducky.
Well, anyway, man, thank you. I appreciate thank it. It's long overdue.
Thank
and,
you.
Man, congratulations to everybody, man, on your success. And wow, man, it's good knowing that's you. Look, now I'm looking. As soon as he said it, I'm like, wow. We all have bacon in common.
Yes, bacon. All right, so on behalf of Laia, Fonticolo, Unpaid Bill, who's not here, and Dr. Bacon, this is Questlove, Questlove Supreme. We'll see you on the next go-round. Thank you, Ray. All right, see y'all.
Hey, this is Sugar Steve. Make sure you keep up with us on Instagram at QLS. And let us know what you think. And who should be next to sit down with us? Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.